Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Celina Quintanilla Perez blazed a trail with a career that was skyrocketing upwards until her untimely death. In the 27 years since, Celina has been memorialized in life-size statues and books. Gregory Nava's 1997 biopic was re-released in theaters this year for its 25th anniversary. Netflix released its miniseries based on her life and career in 2020. The popular podcast Anything for Celina was Apple Podcasts' Show of the Year in 2021. Children throw Celina-themed birthday parties and whack Yolanda Saldivar piñatas while wearing child-size versions of famous Celina outfits. Celina has also become the topic of academic study. This summer, the University of Texas at San Antonio is offering the course Celina, a Mexican-American Identity and Experience. The virtual audited course will be led by Dr. Sonia Alemán, associate professor in UTSA's Race, Ethnicity, Gender, and Sexuality Studies Department. Alemán says the course is not meant to be a biography of the Queen of Tejano Music.
I mean, I think in the course title, I try to capture the direction that we're going, where Celina is really an entree point to talk about what it's like to grow up of a racialized ethnicity that spans two different kind of cultural worlds, having Mexican ethnic roots and being American. She symbolized and represented that beautifully in her career. And so we use the course to look at the ways that she did that and the reasons that those conditions existed for her and continue to exist today that cause members of this community to have that experience of either biculturality, bilingualism, the different forces of assimilation that have impacted the community for generations now. And so she's really just the starting off point to really talk about that. We look at what it was like for her, how people made sense of that for her, her fan base, other scholars, and then how students can see parallels to their own lives by looking at her experience. And as you say, it's not a biography. The course material that we use for the course is not any biographies about her. We're not looking at anything that has been published or written in that vein. So what we're reading are scholarly works that have been published about her. And some of them have been from scholars outside of the community, some from members of the community who saw her perform or at least were aware of her career at that time. And so we're looking at, again, the sense-making that they attempted at the time, primarily after the moment of her death, right? That's kind of when that scholarship would have taken off. And so that's what we delve into the course.
What do you think it was about Celina that maybe set her apart from some of her contemporaries? I'm thinking maybe about some of her Mexican contemporaries or Mexican-American contemporaries. What is it about her that you think stood out the most?
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan of Tejano music during the course of her career. I'm able to say that I saw her perform four times, but her performances were among many at that time. I mean, I saw all the top bands at that time, went to many of the dances at the Tejano clubs that were here in the 90s. And I think even then it was really clear that she, you know, had this really personable, likable quality on stage. She was otherworldly, but she was also one of you. I mean, she very much never variated from that persona in her interactions with fans, the way she presented herself on camera and interviews. So I think that that is one of the endearing qualities of her legacy, but also what kind of set her apart at that time. Her talent is undeniable. The talent that was behind her to help, you know, manufacture the music that still love today was just this magical recipe that came together for her and her family. I say magical, but I mean, they really did put in the work. There was no one day to the next that launched her career. It was many years of working towards that kind of success, of understanding the genre, of developing their skills and talents, and it just hit at a moment, right, that allowed her to drive the peak and the rise of the Tejano music industry at that time and become one of its leaders.
What I think is interesting is that You know, Selena was very often criticized when she would speak, particularly to Spanish language media outlets, because her knowledge of Spanish at the time was not really very good. And I think that is something that many Mexican Americans face on a day-to-day life, especially some who were brought up only speaking English by their families. Maybe they're several generations removed from, you know, their Spanish-speaking relatives. So they might have, you know, that shame about not being able to speak the language everybody assumes you're going to speak. And so I think that is one way that perhaps people on that level relate to Selena.
Absolutely. My students still do, right? So many of them have developed an understanding of them as second-generation Selena fans, because most of them were born after her death, and continue to share that experience, right, about how either they have been ridiculed or shamed, like, along their educational trajectory by some other family members, in public sometimes, about their lack of fluency in Spanish, and that continues to be a source of shame, of guilt, of embarrassment. And so they point to her as helping them move past that, or at least deal with some of those feelings, knowing how she publicly struggled with it and didn't really let any kind of embarrassment about that hold her back from trying to learn it, from struggling with it publicly. And whether they do or not, they at least recognize that it doesn't make them less of a, whether they're using the label Mexican-American, Hispanic, Latina, it doesn't make it any less than, because they don't have that full grasp of the language. I just had, you know, a similar moment for myself in that, you know, teaching this class and getting the opportunity to speak with the press about it, getting an invitation from Univision to be on a national broadcast live all in Spanish, and I didn't feel comfortable enough to do that interview. I don't teach about Selena in Spanish. The course is not in Spanish. I can sing her music in Spanish. I would not feel comfortable, and I wouldn't want to tarnish her legacy or the class by stumbling through that live on national TV. And so it was like gut-wrenching to say, I can't do it, you know, and figure out an alternative, right, to be able to meet that request. So yes, it continues to be a struggle for people like me and for my younger students.
And what I think is also interesting, it's very, you know, well documented in the movie and also in the series, that Selena, I guess, had a bit of naivete, right, about where she was and what she was to people when she was still alive. And she didn't realize all the struggle that came before her until it was sort of explained to her by her father, that Mexican-Americans are just not Mexican enough, they're not American enough, etc.
Being Mexican-American is tough. Anglos jump all over you if you don't speak English perfectly. Mexicans jump all over you if you don't speak Spanish perfectly. We got to be twice as perfect as anybody else. Why are you laughing? What's so funny?
Nothing.
I'm serious. Our family has been here for centuries, and yet they treat us as if we just swam across the Rio Grande.
How is that going to come into your class? Because, again, it's something that all of us have dealt with. Perhaps all of us have, you know, had that same sort of naivete. We don't know what came before us, and we just sort of take everything for granted.
Yeah, it was actually one of the kind of jumping off points for the course, was that particular iconic line that Edward James almost utters in the film, right, to give us a brief glimpse into how Selena would have heard it growing up in her family, that kind of understanding. And so, yeah, we deal with it in the class. We have students share where are their experiences where that has happened to them. One of the things that the course material allows students to do is, one in particular, the book that Dr. Deborah Paredes wrote really talks about Selena as a contested figure at the time. And so, for the most part, my students' understanding is that she's just this beloved, untouchable figure and always has been. But with the book, which was written a little bit less than, or published 10 years after her death, was kind of like additional like tensions and conflict about people identifying her as someone who would be a role model, as someone who deserved recognition at the state level and for the city of Corpus Christi, and seeing the ways that those frictions kind of emerge in public discourse about her gives us, again, another way to talk about those continuing patterns of resistance and maybe anti-Mexican sentiment, and, you know, really using that to connect to the larger histories that these Mexican-American communities have experienced, especially here in Texas. So, yes, it allows us to do all of those things, because there was a moment in the film, right, where her father tells her that.
Sonia Aleman is an associate professor in the Race, Ethnicity, Gender, and Sexuality Studies Department at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Aleman will lead the virtual course, Selena, a Mexican-American Identity and Experience, beginning May 31st. When we come back, studying Selena is a gateway to learning more about one's culture.
One of the beautiful things for me is that the course allows them to recognize how important it is to have curriculum that's grounded in their community's history and the people that come from their community.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Selena was fatally wounded today at a day's end just before noon, rushed to a hospital, into an operating room, but she died about an hour later. Now, as we said, police took the suspect into custody just minutes ago, and there's late word she apparently worked at Selena's clothing store.
Most people who were around in 1995 remember where they were when they heard that Selena had been killed by the former president of her fan club. Selena's death, weeks shy of her 24th birthday, was met with expressions of grief and disbelief.
And, you know, it just hurts. She's a good person.
Someone just point blank in front of everyone just shoot someone, you know, it's crazy. And I hope justice is served.
Yeah, this is very difficult. We lost something that was very dear to our hearts, Santa Fe Tejanos. She was loved everywhere. And we lost something that cannot be replaced.
A few days after her death, fans responded angrily to shock jock Howard Stern's reaction to Selena and her music.
This music does absolutely nothing to me. I have no feel. It's almost like you could not have it on or have it on and my mood wouldn't change. Alvin and the Chipmunks had more soul. I'll never get this. I see this on Spanish TV all the time. I have no idea why she would even be popular over somebody else. This doesn't move you in any way, does it?
Listen to it if I had a choice.
Yeah, I mean, Spanish people.
If it was playing, I'd say, oh, there's a beat anyway.
Spanish people have the worst taste of music. They really do.
They don't like depth.
No, they don't like any depth. It's all like, you know.
No matter what you thought of Selena or her music, it was becoming a certainty in the days, months, and years that followed that Selena was becoming bigger than Selena. She'd become an icon and a larger symbol of hope in achieving the American dream. That broader symbolization of Selena inspired a popular course at the University of Texas at San Antonio, Selena, a Mexican-American Identity and Experience. Sonia Aleman will lead the course. She says Howard Stern's comments 27 years ago are teachable moments because they're similar to broader online hate that's circulating today.
One of the things that has happened in the two semesters that I've taught it and I've played that clip of Howard Stern saying what he did, you know, students really, really wrestle and are shocked that those sentiments could be played on the air today, right? It doesn't feel like that was such a long time ago. People don't feel that way anymore. They feel that's very much the kind of discourse that still exists about our communities. They think about what are the ways that we would respond differently as a community, given social media. You know, they talk about using that to boycott him and cancel him in ways that they wouldn't see playing out. I do try to have them understand that there were collective actions and there were boycotts, but, you know, being able to do it from your phone is a different experience for this generation. So we wrestle with it on that level, knowing that those kinds of tensions are still there. And so it's not so much whether she should or shouldn't be, but where are those sentiments and attitudes coming from? What are they rooted in? How deep do they go that they could still be repeated today?
Well, you mentioned that most of the people in your class were not born when Selena was around. Do they share stories about where they first heard her, how they first became aware of her? I'm guessing it was probably their parents who introduced them to the music.
Yeah. So one of the really, I think, things that has been the most exciting for me and for my students is that the main assignment for the course is that they interview three people who have identified themselves as Selena fans, and two of them have to be the second generation group. Then they transcribe those interviews. Then they work in a group where they analyze like a set of nine interviews to understand like what is the meaning making that's happening for this group that's so different from what the majority of the scholarship we're reading is based on, which happened like within the first decade after her death. It's based on her kind of initial fan base, if you will. And so what those patterns that have emerged over the course of the two semesters is that for students, it's they learn about her through watching the biopic, right? And so there's a lot of girls who will share, like, I would rewatch it on repeat, and I would learn all the moves, and I would perform for my family. Or, you know, we play her music at every family gathering, right? If it's a birthday, if it's just a weekend get-together, it's her music that's playing. It's her music that they remember at their cousin's quince or their tia's wedding, right? So she's kind of become part of the cultural fabric of how they understand their family traditions and customs. So she's been enfolded into all of that. So that is, like, how they know her. One of the other things that their interviews have revealed in these conversations that they've had with fans is that sometimes the point of connection is, like, one of their parents' memories of seeing her or a close encounter they might have had with her or a member of the Quintanilla family or Chris Perez. You know, I got a book autographed by him. Or my mother, as a teenager, she was at the mall when Selena was at the mall here in San Antonio. She was, like, in the same building. And it becomes almost like their story, too. Or they dressed as her for a talent show. So those are the ways that they build that relationship and connection that's different from folks like me, right, who would have had, like, personal memories of seeing and hearing her. One of the things that has been really cool about this experience is that students really love the fact that they're generating new knowledge about Selena in their interviews, right? They are producing knowledge that doesn't currently exist in, like, the world of academia about this, like, second generation of fans. One of the beautiful things for me is that the course allows them to recognize how important it is to have curriculum that's grounded in their community's history and the people that come from their community, that they have ways of knowing that are important to look at, to criticize, to embrace. And so students walk away not only with that, but knowing that they're contributing to the knowledge that exists because of the work that they're doing. And for them, it's a little intimidating, the first interview, but after that, they just become conversations that they have with people. And so it doesn't feel like work to them, but it is, right? Like, it's scholarship that they're producing. And I really, really emphasized for them to recognize themselves as scholars doing this work and gathering more information about Selena.
So the University of Texas at San Antonio, it's a Hispanic-serving institution. How does this course sort of help elevate the university's mission?
I think it aligns with it perfectly. When I introduced the idea to my colleagues, wouldn't it be cool if we offered a class on Selena? And it was like, yeah, why wouldn't it be here at UTSA? I mean, it's, you know, amazing that it hasn't happened yet, but if it's going to happen here in the state of Texas, it should be at UTSA, right? This is because of who we are as a university, who we are as an institution, our mission to serve this particular population, and because it's in the city where the base of her musical career, right, where that industry kind of has taken root and grown. And so, yeah, it makes perfect sense for UTSA to be the one offering this course.
But the course is not going to be offered just to UTSA enrollees, right? Tell us more about who it's open to.
So in the summer, this iteration of the course in the summer, I have taken advantage of the option that UTSA and other institutions have to allow individuals to audit the course, which allows folks from outside of UTSA to enroll in the course. And, I mean, I've gotten requests since the course launched in the fall of 2020 from outside of UTSA. I've fielded numerous requests from across the nation, even internationally. Please, is there a way I can take this course? And I always knew that I wanted to, and I always knew that it made sense. And I also feel that that's an important part of fulfilling UTSA's mission, is to create that connection and outreach, right, with our larger community. And so, yeah, this summer just seemed the perfect opportunity to do it, to allow a larger window, if you will, for folks to be able to take the course in the time frame that it was going to be offered. So I'm really, really excited about that. And I've already had a lot of emails and follow-up emails from people who are waiting for a final answer. And the process that is in place is that waiting till the end of May, which would be the start of the semester, to kind of make all those final decisions and process that paperwork. So it's going to be a few more weeks before I can let everybody know if their application was accepted and they can be in the course. But I hope that it's not the only time that if I'm able to continue teaching the course, that I would be able to continue offering spots for community members to be a part of it.
Is it going to be a virtual or in-person or a mix of both?
It's virtual.
So that anybody really from around the world can apply.
Yes, again, that was intentional because I wanted to make it as broad as possible and to welcome as many people as we could.
Dr. Sonia Aleman is an associate professor in the Race, Ethnicity, Gender, and Sexuality Studies Department at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Aleman will lead the virtual course, Selena, a Mexican-American Identity and Experience, beginning May 31st. The course is open to all. Find a link to the audit form and instructions, and find more information about the course at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week for Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Brie Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Bye.